You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking about Texas, Texas, Texas. I got to tell you, I love you, Texas GOP, keeping it crazy. Yes, going to talk about their platform. Oh, it's a doozy. New talking points on why we need to hate Obamacare, the EITC, our last socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, rolling in the grave. This transportation bill jam up. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. Maybe. Who knows? The budget cuts are out. Terzai's admission. Chambersburg's hospital. A college football playoff season. And, oh, boy, where do we send the tax dollars? And so much more. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Before we get started, the EITC. Oh, boy, I can't wait. I think I've decided that I'm all in favor of EITC. Yes. All I need to do is start a corporation, and which I already have. I donate a ton of money to whatever school that I want my kids to go to with the quid pro quo that my kids want to come to your school. They give my kids scholarships, and the taxpayers get to pay for it. Oh, boy, I can't wait. Well, it's wrong, isn't it? Don't you think? It's a bad idea? Just a thought? Maybe? I got this press release today, and, you know, you got to love these crazy right-wing front groups who send out these press releases. Oh, we could see a school choice victory. Oh, ho, ho. A victory for who? And in their piece, they go into talking, oh, we want to expand school choice, because, you know, they've got to pander to that. Because, you know, they think that if they keep talking about choice, that people will go, oh, yeah, I want more choice. When the real truth of the matter is that this is the most anti-choice agenda. The idea is to destroy public education. That's the goal. And then once it's privatized and profitized, then that's when the fun begins. But they, you know, they're doing it. They're you know, shilling where they have to, because, you know, they know where their paycheck comes from. So the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, a group that gets a whole ton of money. In fact, I asked them point blank, well, who are your funders? I mean, if you believe in open and accountable and you believe in transparency, who are you shilling for? Their response is, I don't have to tell you, which is why I think we need to have laws that say you do. But they sent out this press release, and it's a beaut. They said, you know, while the budget talks are going on, we just learned that secretly there have been talks going on. And the House and the Senate leadership, they've been talking about expanding choice. Oh, boy! In the form of the successful, and they underline successful, education improvement tax credit. Hoo-hoo! Then they go on to speak a bit of truth, which this is where it all breaks down for the average person who goes, you know, I would love to send my kids to that private school that's $10,000 a year. I would love to send my child to that school that's five or six or whatever the number is. 10,000 seems to be about right. When I looked into the one Montessori school, I think they wanted somewhere in the $9,000 range. A bit of, you know, and again, the Republicans are, you know, sometimes slip. You know, these shills sometimes slip. According to Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, the scholarship organizations administer the funds that these corporations give them, And the average scholarship that they give out is $1,100. Now, here's the thing. Here's what gets me. And later on, they go into this whole why the EITC is so important and these opportunity scholarships. You got to love that. Opportunity scholarships. Ooh. Going to give these kids in the lowest 15% of schools, going to give them a chance to go somewhere else. Where are you going to go with $1,100? Now, they say, well, you know, students, you know, without disabilities could get $8,500. The average scholarship is $1,100. I guess I struggle to see how that's going to help me who, you know, look, I make a reasonable living. My kids want for nothing, but I don't know that I could come up with, for three kids, $9,000 a piece, $27,000 a year, when each of them are going to get $1,100. Sorry, you know, $3,300 is nice, but it's not going to put a dent really in the $27,000. And this is where I think, you know, people who may be drawn in by the, oh, I'd love to have the choice. This is where I think most people, the rubber meets the road. Is it going to have any effect on helping the people that the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania and Jim Christiana, who has put forth this bill to, you know, expand the EITC program? This is where the rubber meets the road. Is it going to help those people who they claim it's going to help? And the answer is flat out no. And it's not, understand, it's not meant to help them. It's not. It's meant to make those schools, especially the ones at the bottom 15% that they claim to want to help, it's about making them broke. It's about destroying them quicker. And it's about putting money into the wealth class's pocket and into the upper tier's pocket. I know very few people who send their kids to private school that $1,100 would foot the bill. None. I know it would be for the folks who are doing it, it would be a nice chunk of change to put in their pocket, but they're already doing it, and don't try and convince me that it's going to help the poorest of the poor, because it's not meant for that. It's not meant for that whatsoever. This is meant to appease the homeschoolers. This is meant to appease the religious organizations. And I can't wait. Once we get to the end of the road, because we know it's coming, the Republicans have steamroller power. This is going to pass. You and I are going to fund it. You and I, the taxpayers, are going to pay for all of these right-wing religious schools to start. And then eventually the other side will start their little schools. And you're going to divide and conquer education. And that is the goal. Understand, that is the goal. And I love what they finish up their little email with. If this legislation were enacted as written, it would represent a significant victory for school choice in Pennsylvania. Hopefully the House and Senate will pass this legislation prior to their summer break. If not, thousands of Pennsylvania's children will be sentenced to another year of failing schools. Again, you know, nice shill job, Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. The reality is, and this is something that you'll never hear them say, the vast majority of schools in our state are not failing. In fact, until the Corbett administration came around, our schools were doing very well, thank you very much. We were seeing improvements every single year. Why? Because we were investing in it. We were saying that as a nation, we value the next generation. We value their education. We want them to be the smartest they can be. We want them to get the training and the knowledge and all of that. But now we've got an administration here who's saying, well, tax cuts for corporations, much more important, much, much more important than education. And what I find hysterical is that there was a group, the Pittsburgh Opera, who gave Tom Corbett a Lifetime Achievement Award for his commitment to education. And I'm going, exactly why does the opera have the ability to give a Lifetime Achievement Award to anything? Especially education. Really? And then you find out, you dig into it, you find out that the CEO or the head or the chairman or the whatever the person is who's sitting on the opera board, well, don't you just know that they've got the contract to advertise for the lottery? And there's a whole ton of shenanigans going on around that. And again, you go, this is what drives me nuts about government. And I agree with my T-Twit friends who are, government's so screwed up. Yeah, when you put people in charge of it who are, they're telling you, I'm going to screw this up. I'm going to destroy it. I don't believe it. I don't believe in government. I don't believe in public education. I don't believe in public anything. And you get voters going, hey, this guy, I won't. He's going to hold my taxes down. Until you realize that, uh-oh, my property values just hit the toilet because the school district that I've invested in is now broke. And we're underfunding education, and people like me are leaving because I want to send my kids to a decent school. But, you know, but Rick, you've got choice. You've got school choice. You can choose between crazy right-wing school and crazy right-wing school. And now you see here in Harrisburg, who's talking about doing away with kindergarten. And their great hope is this EITC thing. We're begging the corporations, oh, please, won't you consider helping us save children's futures? And you know they're going to come to the rescue because they need the PR. They need the, it's a beautiful system they've created. They have made disaster after disaster. They have caused crisis after crisis. And here we are, the great knights coming in to save the crisis. You know, it's like when I was a kid, underdog, here I come to save the day. And what did you end up with? Well, we're going to end up with privatized kindergarten. 20, 30 years of progress. 20, 30 years of moving ahead. Destroyed. And for what? So they can make a profit from it. And you know what? There are some people who would probably run a pretty decent kindergarten. I know a couple of people who I happen to think are very good teachers who would do a pretty good job. But the reality is this is going to be one of those profit centers. This is going to be one of those opportunity networks, opportunity zones. Such nice corporate tees. And at the end of it, you and I are going to end up paying more for what had been our public education system. And it's frustrating, it's angering, but I guess it is what it is. So let's take a quick break, right back after this. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The United Mine Workers of America is fighting hard against an effort by Peabody Coal to destroy pension and health care for retired miners and their families. UMWA says Peabody spun off a company called Patriot Coal and set that up to fail so bankruptcy could be filed, allowing the company to shed $1.6 billion in promised pension and health care benefits for retired miners. The UMWA is planning a protest Monday at Patriot Coal's Charleston, West Virginia offices. UMWA President Cecil Roberts.
This might be legally correct. Is morally corrupt, and we're going to find out if the United States government, state governments, the court systems, I believe it's all right for corporations to be morally corrupt and to do their workers and their retirees and their widows like this.
Taken from the UMWA video, here are union miners, relatives, and UMWA leaders talking about the fight for fairness at Patriot Coal.
These men worked, and my husband worked, so that you could have a company and you can make your millions of dollars. Why just discard them and throw them away? And that's exactly what you're doing. It's like you're opening up a trash can and dumping them in the trash. And I can't see you doing people like that.
And just to take me and put me over here and then put my benefits in jeopardy. So good.
How can they sit there with a clear conscience and do this to the people that made them the number one co-producer in the world? It's immoral. It's wrong. And there's going to be a day of reckoning, and it's coming soon.
Until I die, I will fight. I'll do anything this union asks me to do. A state might end up having to pay for my medical coverage if I end up in jail. That's what it takes. That's what it takes.
We got some fighters in this union, and I think they're going to fight it, and I think we're going
to
win it.
Brazil is the most recent country to expand rights for domestic workers, Jesse Russell reports.
There are an estimated 7 million domestic workers in Brazil, and new legislation about to become law in that country will grant them the same rights as any other worker. The most recent piece of legislation will give household maids and cooks in that country overtime if they work more than 8 hours a day and 44 hours per week. The new law also requires employers to pay into a fund for each domestic worker, equivalent to 8% of their monthly pay. The intention is that this money will be given to the worker if the employer dies or if there are other contingencies leading to abrupt termination of service. The legislation comes on the heels of other laws passed in recent years that include guaranteed maternity leave and paid holidays. It is projected that the cost of hiring a domestic worker could increase by nearly 20% with the expanded rights. There has been a growing movement in the United States to pass similar legislation federally.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Right now, we are hard at work to bring a major natural gas processing plant to southwestern Pennsylvania. The best argument we can make to the company behind the project is Pennsylvania's embrace of free markets.
Yes, it's the free market that brought it. It wasn't the free money, no. Don't look behind the curtain. It wasn't the free money, no. Because we believe in free markets, just like our kindergartens here in Harrisburg are going to be saved. Saved by the profiteers. And you know this, because this EITC thing's just got me nuts. And don't worry about Harrisburg. The corporations will save your kindergartens for now. They'll come in with just nuts. There was a hearing today out in Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh area, talking about nonprofits. And you look at Harrisburg here. You've got all of these nonprofits here. You've got all these government agencies pay no taxes to the city. You wonder why the city's in the financial straits it's in, along with a bunch of mismanagement. But one of the people there at the hearing was Chelsea Wagner. She is the county controller, I guess, of Allegheny County. Chelsea, thanks for taking time for me.
Sure, absolutely, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this, you know, here in Harrisburg anyway, you've got all these nonprofits, you've got all these government agencies who pay almost nothing in taxes, and, you know, they're talking about doing away with kindergarten. They're talking about doing away with music and art and all sports programs because the city just doesn't have the money to fund it.
Right. It's unbelievable. And I was in the legislature for 5 years, so I spent some time in Harrisburg before being elected to this position. So I think we're in a very, very similar situation here in Allegheny County.
So it was probably a good thing you got out of there, because the insanity that's going on across the street is just has hit a fevered pitch at this point.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's just extremely, extremely frustrating.
So the press release that I got said that Allegheny County is losing $95 million in revenue a year because of these property tax exemptions to these nonprofits. Tell me about that.
Well, what we did is looked at all of the parcels, and that's just for Allegheny County.
Right.
County government, which, as in most situations, when you're kind of cross-referencing county versus municipal versus school district, county is typically the lowest of the taxing bodies. So that's just $95 million in county government alone. But when you look to the municipal government, say the city of Pittsburgh, the school districts, it's far greater than $95 million. And basically what we're asking for is some for our county to start, institute some measures of transparency and fairness. And we think that a recent court decision, a Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision, really opens the door for that, finally, after all of these years of talking about how we need to make some of these so-called nonprofits that are really for-profit ventures pay their fair share.
Like, I'm thinking about this hospital out in Chambersburg that they're Their CEO is making almost $1.5 million. They claim to be not-for-profit, and they're trying to cut their workers' wages. Are we talking about them, or are we talking about some other type of nonprofit?
Well, I think they can fall into that category. One of the things that's difficult right now is that the data is pretty much garbage. So we work on a really antiquated system here where there are, in Allegheny County, for example, 215 land use codes. So it's very, very cryptic. It's very difficult to see how a property is actually being used. So what we're asking is that we institute a system that says, you know, maybe that hospital has some services that are, in fact, nonprofit, but they probably have some services also on different properties that are purely for profit. And it's only fair that we distinguish between the two.
Right.
And it's fair if, in fact, they are taking a burden off government, if they're a truly charitable purpose, to give the exemptions in that instance. But that doesn't mean that they're deserving of exemptions for absolutely everything they do.
Yeah, I mean, what you just said, the churches pop into my mind. I agree tax exempt for the building of worship, but all of the ancillary buildings, I kind of got to wonder about.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, you look at this, and could this save school districts like here in Harrisburg? Could it save counties like Allegheny County, save your transit or the services that you're providing? I mean, I look at out in your way, the transit cuts that they're talking about are just devastating to low-income working people.
Right, absolutely. And I guess similarly here with education, I mean, the Pittsburgh Public Schools are facing a layoff of about a quarter of our teachers.
Wow.
And what that's going to mean for our classroom sizes. So we have the same problem. So whether it's transit, human services, education, all of these services are drastically, drastically declining. And it's interesting because some of the nonprofits here, the comments that I've heard in the media in response to this is, well, we make these major contributions. And in my thinking, you know, these are very, very sophisticated operations. So I'm sure that they're calculating everything down to the penny. Why then shouldn't our governments be calculating their impact in the same way? Yeah. I think there's a real disconnect there.
Well, I look at the, you know, I use hospitals as an example. I know UPMC is the big hospital out that way. They, as you pointed out, they have a nonprofit function, but also they generate a ton of revenue, and they have a ton of excess operating, I would call profits, but they've got a different word for it. There's a ton of that.
Right, absolutely. And so what's interesting about this recent court case, just going to Pennsylvania history, is that initially back in the 80s, the Supreme Court said that there was a five-part test to determine whether something is a public charity. And then you had the legislature step in the 90s and soften that a bit. But just in April of this year, the Supreme Court said very, very firmly that public charities need to meet this test that basically asks what their charitable purpose is, whether they can really prove that they're taking a burden off of government, along with a few other specific items. And so what we're saying here in Allegheny County is, why can't each of those organizations be filing an affidavit every single year saying exactly how they are meeting that test? And I really can't see what is so difficult or what's so reprehensible about that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's because honestly and truthfully, it's our tax dollars who are paying for them to exist. If they're claiming to be operating in the public good and doing, you know, public charity, I think they should have to, well, at least let us know what they're doing, no?
Right, exactly. And I think every year we pay taxes every year. If they are deserving a tax break every year, I think that that's fair enough that they can simply tell us why. Because functions change, and you know it's just a matter of simple fairness. And there's no question that we definitely need this revenue in government right now. It's not in a time when we can just be giving tax breaks away and not really holding people accountable.
Yeah. So how do we get this passed? I mean, is this an act of the legislature? Is this counties taking the initiative from the Supreme Court decision? What has to happen?
Well, what our office has done, we believe very, very strongly that this does open the door for counties or municipalities, school districts to really advocate. So what we're working to do in Allegheny County, we're recommending that we engage in a collaborative effort with our school districts and municipalities to really identify the parcels of land that are questionable. There have been some responses here that people say, oh, that's up to the state legislature. Again, I was in Harrisburg for 5 years, and I don't think it's a safe bet at this day and age to really think that all of our problems are going to be solved in Harrisburg.
No, and what you've got over here now is anything that would raise taxes on anybody, a Pavlovian rabid response to. And I don't see that ever. I don't see anything like this getting through the legislature right now.
Right, right. And it's interesting because what they did in the 90s, they softened the standard. It was Act 55 in the 90s, in 1997, when the legislature passed that. So what this does is, from the Supreme Court, come back and say, no, the charity does, in fact, need to meet this test. So we think that the language is really clear, and I think this is really an opportunity for particularly the lawyers in counties, in municipalities, and in school districts to really advocate. You know, I don't think that our attorneys need to be the ones who are interpreting the law. We leave that up to the Supreme Court. It's time for us to advocate.
Yeah, and because you look across the board, I mean, all of the cities, all the city and government services that are being slashed, all the workers being sent to the curb, the transit systems that are being just inundated with layoffs and route cuts. Well, as I've been saying, the systematic dismantling of we the people, there's got to be a way of solving some of the problems that we have.
Right, right. And we think this is a great opportunity to really take a specific solution. You know, we're not kidding ourselves that this is going to solve everything, but we have to start chipping away with some actionable items, and we think this is one that can, in fact, make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, at least to be able to show if these charities are out there that they're using the money that we're giving them, our tax dollars, you know, the tax dollars that we're not taking in, that we're giving, that they're actually using them for the purposes that they say they're using them for, and it's actually in the public good.
Right, right. And the way I've said this, too, is I would think that if you are, in fact, a charity that is having such a massive impact, a charitable impact on the public, wouldn't you want the public to know that?
Absolutely.
So why wouldn't you want? Exactly.
Yeah, I'd want to show it off, and I'd want everybody to know so that maybe you use that as a revenue generator so that you can do more. I mean, you think of the Salvation Army, their slogan, doing the most good. Well, show me what the most good is.
Right, right.
So are there any specifics, any specific organizations that you have in mind that this would help generate revenue to, or don't you want to get into specifics? Because I think some folks maybe go, well, I don't want you going after my churches. I don't want you going after religious organizations because there's they claim a war on religion. Any specifics?
What we have in the report is we've named the top recipients. And we've done that by categories of healthcare, higher education, and then other categories. And the other categories tend to be some kind of related nonprofits, some high schools that are private, or arts organizations. So we see the distinction really in all three of these categories because we know that these aren't all apples. I mean, you have apples and oranges, and they're all very different. So I think in our recommendations is really the key, is talking about the fact that our current system doesn't allow government to distinguish between what is really charitable and what's not. So we're calling for a parcel-by-parcel examination so that we could really have an organization show us why a specific parcel has or meets that charitable purpose test.
I'm all in favor of it. I think it's a good idea. What do we do to help push this along? Is there a direct ask, or what do you want us doing?
Well, that's exactly it. If we can encourage our municipalities to examine the actual function of the different parcels of land, I think this is something that we can do statewide. I've certainly talked to some attorneys who are more skeptical But again, and I'm also an attorney, I really think that this for our local governments is the opportunity for our legal departments to be advocates. I don't think it's our role to always be interpreting the law, but this is really an open door. So what we can do is look at these designations parcel by parcel and challenge them. If they are a for-profit venture, if they can't show that they meet this test, then they shouldn't get the exemption.
I agree. And maybe this is a way we save some of the social services that are being gutted by the budget that, well, I just saw some of the numbers today. Maybe this is a way we solve some of those problems.
Right. I hope so. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's hard to call it a deal. I don't know a deal for whom.
Yeah, there's no deal here. This is robbery is what it was.
Right.
But, you know, they're telling me they restored some of it, and that's a good thing. You know, they're going to cut both my arms off, and they only chopped off one, so they've restored one of my arms in their vernacular.
Okay.
Nuts. Chelsea Wagner, I appreciate the time. Allegheny County Controller, thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you, Rick.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Beat up cars, tires, and drummers go crack.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace. Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed.
Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Or give us a call here at the studio, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, this whole thing with I've always been in favor of looking at these charities and always been in favor of looking at these nonprofits and saying, are you doing what's good for the community? Are you doing something for the common good? It's my tax dollar. We should be looking at that. And I'm all in favor of it. Let's go to the phone lines. I've got Tom on line one. How you doing tonight, Tom?
Hey, good, Rick. How you doing?
I can't complain. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was listening earlier to Chelsea, and one of the things she mentioned, I worked in healthcare years ago, so one of the things that a lot of these nonprofits do, they all file 990s, which is a nonprofit tax return.
Right.
And these things, I think she mentioned about doing an annual affidavit. These are annual, and they're pretty extensive with information, executive salaries. They talked about the charitable mission. They actually list out all the information. I think that it's probably all the information she'd ever want and more.
I don't think that's what she's talking about. I think she's talking about looking at facility after facility, and I don't know that that really goes into it. You're talking about CEO compensation, and you're talking about the where they're spending the money. I think what she's talking about is, look, if you've got a hospital and they've got some for-profit offshoots, that's what they want to look at.
Well, yeah, but she was also saying about sort of touting their nonprofit mission and what they do. So I understand the point about looking at individual parcels of property, but, you know, the ultimate goal of looking at them is to understand, hey, are they acting in a charitable manner, whether it's a hospital or a soup kitchen or whatever. But, you know, much of that information is listed in the 990, and a lot of them will actually issue an annual report, a community benefit report. So it just, it sounded like it wasn't having all the facts, basically, because there is actually a very detailed report. Just a tidbit from my time in healthcare, so I'd share it with your listeners.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, Rick. Bye.
The 990s are out there for a lot of different nonprofit organizations. He's right, and we use them all the time to look up what CEOs are making, what amount of money. Where I'm on her side, I think you need to look at the entire operation, building by building. Same thing with the churches. I've talked about that for years. You know, I'm all in favor of, you know, the tax exemption for the house of worship, but the pastor's house and the six or seven other properties that they may own, and this and that, and I think we should be looking at the exemptions that we're giving. It's that simple for me. Our quote of the day comes from Ralph Martier, executive director of the Nonpartisan Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. Quote: "Those who don't believe in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny anymore, and actually look at the facts and data, recognize that since supply-side economics has been implemented in America, the complete opposite of what the supply-siders had promised has occurred." And, you know, that's what we've been talking about for the longest time. Everything that they told us was going to happen, not so much. The trickle-down that was supposed to come, the flows of gold and honey, if we just gave the folks at the top all of the wealth and said, here, create something. We found that they created things in China. And you look at what Biden said. You know, Romney's the guy who's he knows how to create jobs in China and Singapore and Indonesia and in India. It's kind of worked out that way. And you look at this report by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, who, you know, kind of says what we have already known. Bloomberg reported on it today that the nine states who have the highest personal income tax rates actually outperformed or kept pace with the states that had no income tax rates, the nine ones that have none. The median household income declined on an average of 0.7% in the nine high-rate states compared with a 3.5% drop in the nine states without such a levy. The study found no difference in the average unemployment rate between the two groups of states. And what they're telling us, and we're hearing it here in Pennsylvania, we've got the highest rate, highest tax rates, highest this rates, highest that rates, and oh, we need to cut those. I mean, we see study after study after study that's telling us, you know what, that has very little to do with it. Infrastructure, education, that has a lot to do with attracting business. And you look at today, back in 1956, Congress actually worked. They approved the Federal Highway Act, the brainchild of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, who back during his time during the war realized, you know, hey, Germany has this Autobahn network. They've got these highways. They've got these roads and bridges. They get stuff around. Maybe we should do that. And originally the bill was the National System of Interstate and Defense Highways, just simply down to the Federal Highway Act. But Congress allocated more than $30 billion for 41,000 miles of interstate highway, put tens of thousands of people to work almost immediately. I mean, it was almost instant. They got tens of thousands of people to work, built over a 13-year period. The federal government paid for 90% of it. And you listen to what they're telling us now. Oh, well, we can, Romney's saying, oh, well, you know, we can build roads and bridges, but we need to put up toll booths and we need public-private partnerships because we need my friends to get in there and get their hands in the pockets. It's nuts. But again, you know, it's who are they fighting for? And you think about, by building the interstate highway system, you built an entire trucking industry. Because that came and took the railroads away, actually put a lot more people to work. And then out of the highway system, you saw the growth of these little towns and these roadside businesses. You had restaurants and food chains and hotels and amusement parks. All of this stuff sprung up because you built something. And we became a nation of drivers. Like it or not, that's the reality. That's what sprung up out of it. And by 1960, one in seven people in this country was directly or indirectly employed in the auto industry. The same auto industry that Romney wanted to see go broke. So you talk about Romney. Romney had a campaign event today hosted by James Parker, the chief executive officer of Carter Machinery. Carter Machinery is, you know, they make these stuff for infrastructure. They make, you know, big machines and stuff that helps pave roads. The CEO says, well, you know, I disagree with Obama's how he wants to pay for infrastructure, but I'm all in favor of it. We need to build roads and bridges because it's going to help our business. All in favor of it. So he doesn't want to raise taxes on the ultra-wealthy people like him. He wants gas tax. He wants to raise that gas tax. And, you know, you've got the wealth class saying, well, why should we have to pay for it? We don't drive on it. Our businesses do, of course, but we don't. We fly. And you think about all of the money that we should be spending. Parker says that he wants $100 billion a year over the next 5 years. It's $500 billion over 5 years. That's right around double the bill that's in front of Congress right now. What will happen when Romney takes over? Because Romney says, you know, he wants infrastructural improvements. He wants roads and bridges. Doesn't know how he's going to pay for it. Magic beans, maybe. Maybe he's going to, you know, rub a leprechaun's head. I don't know. One thing he said a while ago is, you know, we're going to put up more toll roads, more public-private partnerships. Oh, boy. And I keep asking the question, you know, do we need a public-private partnership? Why do we need to put a profit motive in front of we the people's needs? And it takes me back to what we talked about with Chelsea Wagner. You know, you've got all of these loopholes. You've got all of these tax situations going on where, you know what, we're footing the bill for that. Allegheny County's talking about cutting, what, 35% of its transit? Who uses public transportation? Well, working people. And you're not going to see Romney, and you're not going to see Parker, or you're not going to see you're not going to see Corbett. You're not going to see them riding public transportation. It's people like you and me. Sad stuff. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, going to talk about Texas. I love this. Someone sent me a copy of the Texas GOP platform. I love Texas Republicans. Back after this. Wanna lift you up.
We can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
Earth, sky.
In late 2012, researchers at the National Marine Mammal Foundation published their acoustic analysis of the voice of a whale that apparently can imitate a human voice. Here's what he sounds like from an audio track made by scientist Sam Ridgway and his team, courtesy of the journal Current Biology.
That sound is coming from a beluga, or white whale, named Nock. He lived in an enclosure at the National Marine Mammal Foundation, among dolphins and other white whales. He'd often been in the presence of humans. Researchers working near him sometimes thought they heard another person talking. They were surprised to find the voice was coming from the whale.
That was in 1984. Prior to that time, there'd been anecdotal reports of whales sounding like humans, but no real evidence or analysis. Scientists at the National Marine Mammal Foundation recorded the whale's sounds. They found a rhythm similar to human speech and fundamental frequencies several octaves lower than typical whale sounds.
They said the observations suggest it wasn't easy for the whale to make these sounds. And that, they said, suggests motivation for contact on the part of the whale. For more about Nock, the whale with a human voice, come to earthsky.org. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Together there's power when we hold the tide. Power when we stand and fight together.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I got a list of demands, spinning on the palm of my hand. Come on, watch this, and you are the right man. Feeling an end about the world of see somebody, try to free somebody. Got a list of demands, spinning on the palm of my hand.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Ron sent me an email during the break, said, that reminds me of a line from a Chuck Norris movie. He says to the bad guy, if I wanted your opinion, I'd beat it out of you. And he says, I think that's the discipline model the right wants. And I agree, Ron. You know, that we want seen, not heard. We want obedient little workers. We want people never going to stand up, never going to question, going to do what they're told. Keep their head down, never question, never say, hey, why is it that we're not getting health care? Why is it we're not getting pensions? Why is it we're not able to fight for better wages, hours, conditions? Why is that? Well, because the bosses said no. Which is why I think what you're seeing across this country, this assault on organized labor, this assault on organized workers is going on, because they're the last group. They're the last group to stand up and say, no, we're not going to deal with bad conditions, and no, we're not going to work for basically free, which is why I think it's important that when you see labor struggles going on, we support them. If you look out in Chambersburg, Chambersburg Hospital made $22 million in profit. This is a nonprofit. $22 million in excess operating expenses, if you will. And now they're asking their workers for pay cuts, asking them to pay more for their health benefits. doesn't seem to be right. Tomorrow there is an action. Tomorrow, 4 o'clock, the Chambersburg Town Square, southeast corner of Main Street and Lincoln Highway. We're going to be there. I've got Margaret Duran. She's an RN at Chambersburg Hospital, here to talk about the event and what's going on there at Chambersburg Hospital. Margaret, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on the show.
What's going on here? Have I got this right? I mean, this is a hospital that, for all intent and purposes, fairly profitable, asking for pay cuts, asking you to pay more for health care. Is that about right?
Well, just about. They are asking for us to contribute to our health care expenses, which will end up being a pay cut, because the raises that they're offering are not enough to offset the cost we will have for health care. So in a profitable hospital, who we're very happy that they're profitable. It's good for us. It's good for our community. It's good for our families. But we're asking to share in that success.
Absolutely.
Because we help them make that success.
Well, you're the ones who made the success. I mean, you're the person. If I'm in the hospital, you're the one taking care of me.
Exactly.
We
absolutely participate in it.
Not the CEO who, as I'm looking at the one report, the 990 here, almost $1.5 million. Is that what he made?
In salary and bonuses, I believe that is correct.
$1.5 million, and they want folks who are cleaning up, doing the hard work of taking care of me. They want you to, in essence, take a pay cut.
Yes, that has been our difficulty in these negotiations, frankly.
So how long has this been going on?
We started in mid-May with negotiations, and tonight, I believe, was our ninth session. We do have another one coming up on Thursday, and we're really excited about our rally tomorrow, and we're hoping we're just inviting everybody to come down and kind of party with us and celebrate and show some unity for the workers here. We're real proud of our community. We are really proud of our hospital and the work that we do, and we want to have a chance to kind of get everybody together to celebrate that.
And to bring the community and say, look, you know, you want to have the best hospital. You want to have
the
best trained, best paid workforce, because at the end of the day, look, you're taking care of my most valuable commodity, me.
Exactly. You know, we want to be able to attract and retain really good people with really good skills, and, you know, bring physicians in, because we've got great support staff that will support them, that will support our community and make sure we stay healthy. Our community is healthy, and our, you know, the workforce is healthy. So we want to work together with a hospital to attain that.
I always find it interesting, and I guess it's kind of ironic that you're talking about a hospital that wants to take health, that wants you to pay more for health insurance. I would think it would just be, you come to the hospital, we'll take care of you.
Yes, it is kind of the irony of the situation. It really is. And then when you look at how successful they are, which again, we have no argument with how successful they are. We're fortunate that in this day and age with healthcare, the situation in this country, the way it is with healthcare, that they are as successful as they are. And so it's just something that we're a little sort of stunned by, really, the concessions that they're asking for.
I was talking to someone earlier, and I mean, it's not like you're paid $1.5 million a year.
No, that is correct.
I mean, I don't know how a CEO can sit across. I don't know how someone like this could sit across the table from you and say, I know you went to college. I know you went and got all this advanced training to become an RN, and I know you've dedicated your life to taking care of people. And yeah, I know I make $1.5 million a year, but we're going to have to ask you for a pay cut. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, that has been, like I said, that has been the biggest challenge for us, to try to kind of stay in the fight and to really, just keep going back and saying, no, this is what we need. This is what you need to give us. And, working on it.
Right.
That's
our
challenge.
How many people there at the hospital are affected by this contract? I mean, is it just the nurses, or is it, staff? How many of the folks that work there?
Our membership is probably about 1,350.
Oh, wow.
And we cover everybody from, you know, pharmacy, physical therapy, nursing, dietary, housekeeping. It's soup to nuts. It's everybody pretty much top to bottom.
And what's the feeling? What's your sense of the feeling of the membership?
Well, I mean, we're pretty united in how we feel about what we're being asked to do. I mean, we are fortunate. We have a successful hospital. We do pretty well with wages. But now they're asking for concessions, frankly, that would result in losing money over the 4 years of the contract that they are asking for in a time when they are doing very, very well.
And why are they saying that they need that? Why are they saying, and I probably know the answer on defense of the market, you know, we've got to be competitive. Yeah. But, you know, what are they telling you?
They are concerned about the health care, the proposed health care changes, and sort of what's up in the air with the Supreme Court decision coming down at any point, how those laws, either way, whether, you know, the Affordable Care Act is overturned or whether it stays in place, how those changes will affect their future earnings.
Yeah.
So they're concerned about, and understandably so. So are we. Again, we're successful because our hospital is successful. So we are motivated and just as engaged in the changes. We just don't see necessarily the need to make such abrupt and deep changes in a 4-year contract.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
When we don't know what's going to happen, and they don't know what's going to happen yet.
But I can't see how the Affordable Care Act would change the situation, because now you're talking about having more insured people. You're talking about delivering health care, and this is talking about ensuring the delivery of health care. I'm not really sure how that would affect you all that badly.
Yeah, I think the other thing they're concerned about is how Medicare reimbursement is going to be working and how that is going to be paid based on, you know, for instance, patient satisfaction and those kinds of things that are upcoming.
So tomorrow at 4 o'clock, Chambersburg Town Square, southeast corner of Main Street and Lincoln Highway, going to be out rallying the troops. We're going to be there to hopefully, you know, to participate. How many folks are you expecting to come out tomorrow?
Oh, we have gotten other unions are coming to support us. We are just so excited about our rally tomorrow, and we're just hoping we fill the square and just have a great time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Keep up the fight.
Great.
Anything we can do to help in the future, please let us know.
Oh, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much,
Margaret. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
I look forward to seeing you. And look, anybody who wants to come out and join us tomorrow, 4 o'clock, the Chambersburg Town Square, southeast corner, like I said, Main Street and Lincoln Highway. And this is another example of, you know, you've got a very profitable organization here. They made $22 million last year. Their CEO, $1.5 million. You know, I get the shared sacrifice thing. I do. I understand when you're talking about we need shared sacrifice. I do. Where's the sharing, though? You've got a guy making $1.5 million, been there more than 20 years, I guess. You look at this and you go, explain it to me, because I think I'm missing something here. So I'm hoping a whole bunch of people come out and participate in this. It would be a great show of support for them, because, look, you know, I was in a for-profit hospital for a couple of days, and I got to be honest with you, it was really a depressing, really an eye-opening experience. These nurses there who had no say whatsoever, had no say where they were going to be working, what they were going to be doing, contracted in from halfway across the state. There's really a crisis, and when I see a hospital that, you know, has workers who are empowered to say, you know what, we're going to take care of our patients, we're going to have that ability, I want to keep it. And I think the community should as well. So tomorrow, 4 o'clock, the Chambersburg Town Square. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to Win
Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The United Mine Workers of America is fighting hard against an effort by Peabody Coal to destroy pension and health care for retired miners and their families. UMWA says Peabody spun off a company called Patriot Coal and set that up to fail so bankruptcy could be filed, allowing the company to shed $1.6 billion in promised pension and health care benefits for retired miners. The UMWA is planning a protest Monday at Patriot Coal's Charleston, West Virginia offices. UMWA President Cecil Roberts.
This might be legally correct. It's morally corrupt. And we're going to find out if the United States government, state governments, the court systems, I believe it's all right for corporations to be morally corrupt and to do their workers and their retirees and their widows like this.
Taken from a UMWA video, here are union miners, relatives, and UMWA leaders talking about the fight for fairness at Patriot Coal.
These men worked, and my husband worked, so that you could have a company and make your millions of dollars. Why just discard them and throw them away? And that's exactly what you're doing. It's like you're opening up a trash can and dumping them in the trash. And I can't see you doing people like that.
And just to take me and put me over here and then put my benefits in jeopardy. It's no good.
How can they sit there with a clear conscience and do this to the people that made them the number one coal producer in the world? It's immoral. It's wrong. And there's going to be a day of reckoning, and it's coming soon.
Until I die, I will fight. I'll do anything this union asks me to do. A state might end up having to pay for my medical coverage if I end up in jail, but that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
We got some fighters in this union, and I think they're going to fight it, and I think we're going
to
win it.
Brazil is the most recent country to expand rights for domestic workers, Jesse Russell reports.
There are an estimated 7 million domestic workers in Brazil, and new legislation about to become law in that country will grant them the same rights as any other worker. The most recent piece of legislation will give household maids and cooks in that country overtime if they work more than 8 hours a day and 44 hours per week. The new law also requires employers to pay into a fund for each domestic worker, equivalent to 8% of their monthly pay. The intention is that this money will be given to the worker if the employer dies, or if there are other contingencies leading to abrupt termination of service. The legislation comes on the heels of other laws passed in recent years that include guaranteed maternity leave and paid holidays. It is projected that the cost of hiring a domestic worker could increase by nearly 20% with the expanded rights. There has been a growing movement in the United States to pass similar legislation federally.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
I got an email from John. Quote from Abraham Lincoln. Evidently, Abraham Lincoln wrote a letter to Colonel William Elkins. And the quote is, "I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed." Lincoln goes on to say, "I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war." And you look at this and you look at what's going on in this country. 100 years of decided law in Montana just thrown out by a Supreme Court who, you know, the head guy said, "I'm just going to call balls and strikes. Just calling it the way it's been." 100 years of decided law by this conservative Supreme Court just dumped. And they call themselves conservative. Understand what a true conservative is. A true conservative is someone who protects institution, someone who stands by stare decisis, stands by decided law. Not these radicals, not these corporatists, not these people who are beholden to the special interest, not them at all. And, you know, just as Lincoln was afraid of the money taking over the nation, And eventually it did. We are at that moment again. History always repeats itself. And here we are, right back in the same predicament. The same situations. I look at this story from Minnesota. The Star Tribune, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, reported that this inmate, the Xavier Selkar Johnson, died in prison. Why? Well, turns out the for-profit prison decided that, you know, the seizures he was having, didn't need to go to the hospital, didn't need to bother checking the levels of the drug that was supposed to be in his system that was supposed to help cut off the seizures, you know, because you take anti-seizure medication. Turns out the Dilatin he was getting was half of what he was supposed to be getting, well below therapeutic levels, according to the autopsy. Now, the woman, the doctor, the nurse at the time said, no, protocol, we got cost-cutting measures here. We need to strictly monitor cost-cutting measures. So we can't send him to the hospital. Sent the ambulance away that a doctor had said, get him to the hospital. Nurse said no. The for-profit prison is cutting corners. Need to make sure the bottom line, well, I got to make sure the bottom line is looked after. 2 hours after the ambulance was sent away, he died. He was found in his cell in a fetal position, dead. And you go, you know, you look at this. This whole privatization mode, all of this profitization that's going on, our tax dollars. And you go, oh, well, you're just a prisoner. What if that was your son? What if that was your father? What if it was your grandchild? And you look at the Corbett budget, cut more than $21 million from inmate care in this state. $21 million. I wonder, how long will it be before we see something like this in Pennsylvania? Oh, that's okay. They're just prisoners. Again, you know, what if it's you? And you go through this and you look at the report from the Minneapolis Star Tribune and, man, you know, you really? Is this what we're allowing? And the sad reality is, yeah, I guess it is. Did I mention $21 million in inmate cuts in the Corbett budget? In the Republican, and this is the new and updated budget. This is the one where the Republicans came back and said, oh, we're going to restore some of the funding to the stuff that's going to get us reelected, but screw those prisoners and those poor people. And you look at this story from Alabama, and I look at this man, and I go, you know, we're going backwards. We're going back so quickly. Story from Alabama, big headline. You know, the sheriff who spends less on food for the inmates pockets more for themselves. I mean, we are going really backwards. There's a law there, a 1939 law, actually, that allows the 67 sheriffs in the state to pocket whatever's left over. So if you can, you know, cut a little corner here, cut a little corner there, you know, maybe one piece of bread, not two, because that's my Christmas bonus. Yeah, so much better. You know, right? Hey, we're being fiscally responsible, right? The one sheriff, a guy named Mike Rainey, made almost $300,000 from the local, state, and federal governments that was supposed to go to feed the inmates. So almost $300,000 that was supposed to feed the inmates. Pocket it. And you go, you know, really? Another sheriff, Greg Barlett, himself, put behind bars after admitting keeping more than $200,000 of the food budget while the inmates that he was supposed to be overseeing were provided with just horribly inadequate food levels. You go, ah, they're just prisoners, right? I don't care, right? Because as the one sheriff said, incarceration's a punishment. He says, I know some people think you shouldn't worry about what an inmate eats. It's a moral issue. He goes, no, they're not getting filet mignon, nope. 1939 law. Don't you think we ought to look at that maybe? Did I mention Corbett is the budget cutting $21 million from inmate care? And I take it back to this, and you know, I guess it's easy to overlook, but this is big business. There are huge corporations who are making tons of money off of the incarceration levels in this state and in this country. And are they providing us with the service that we could provide for ourselves? No, absolutely not. Locking people up is big business. And it's this whole perverted lobbying system that comes along with it. You get these big companies who go, you know what? No, let's push for three strikes and you're out. Let's push for mandatory sentencing requirements. Let's push for long drug sentences. We'll push those drug users. All the while going, man, we're going to fill our prisons up and we're going to profit from it. And what's it cost us? Well, it's cost us opportunities and lots of them. And look, nobody's talking about not locking up violent offenders. But we are locking people up who, you know, had a little bit of pot on you, locking them up. You know, you look at that scandal up in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, where the judges were bought off. Yeah, give those kids, first offenders, give them long juvenile detention centers, because we run a for-profit juvenile detention center. And we're not talking, you know, a couple bucks, we're talking millions. This is big, big business. And to me, this is another one of those things that, another privatization scheme that has gone awry. Another one of those moments where they told us, and again, they told us, well, you know, they can run it more efficiently, and they can run it better, and they can run it cheaper. Hasn't turned out that way, has it? No, because it never works. When we were doing it for ourselves, it was working just fine. People were locked up. They were getting reasonable treatment. But again, I guess that's part of the whole move away from it being part of the commons, being part of what we do. Because inmates actually still had some rights. When the private for-profit corporation took over, well, who are you going to complain to? The CEO? Do you think he's going to care? The sheriff who has the ability to cut off your food supply? Because he can profit a couple hundred grand out of it? Really? Did I mention Corbett cut $21 million from the inmate care budget? At a time when we have almost record numbers of people locked up? And you think about what we're doing to education. So you're cutting the inmate care budget, but we're cutting money from education, so inevitably we're going to put more people in prison because we're setting them up for that. It really is a very masterful plot, if you think about it. It's really brilliant if you're running a for-profit prison system, if you're one of the three big ones who spend millions of dollars a year lobbying state governments and lobbying the federal government for all of the things that have created the situation we're in. I mean, and I've asked this question a million times. I will ask it a million more. I want to know, you know, where is this privatization working? Where has privatization benefited me and people like me? How has the working class, how has the middle class, whatever it is you want to call it, how do the working people in this country benefit from private prisons, from private hospitals, from private transportation, from private anything? How do taxpayers benefit? We don't. We get screwed. And this move to privatizing education, we're going to get screwed again. Because understand, the state of Pennsylvania has a constitutional position that every child has to have education. And you know the weird thing is, it's public education. So they're going to destroy your local public school, and they're going to have publicly funded charter schools, which are not run by you and me. You know, the one thing I agreed with the Texas Republican platform, all the schools should be run by people who are elected to school boards. They should be under the auspices of elected people, people who we can hold accountable. Not CEOs, not little corporations that we don't know even exist. Because one of the dirty little secrets in this whole charter thing here in the state is that they're run by just a handful of corporations. So sure, you know, John may start a charter school and bring his brother-in-law in because he needs a job and put his grandfather's name on the building because, hey, you know, got to push that legacy. But they're run by big corporations, of course, for a fee that you and I, the taxpayers, pay. Is that right? You know, and I go back to the Biden thing. This election really is about who we are. It is about what direction our country is going to go. It is about us. Simple stuff. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
And they're talking in the town square. It's a terrible thing. I hear them talking everywhere. They're talking never stop. But all their words are wisdom. Won't make you go away. The day they hold the pressure down and nothing. Nothing left to say.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
It's one thing for big oil frackers to bust into our earth, our communities, and our economic well-being, but the fracking fad is also busting the free speech rights of locals who dare to speak out against it. Welcome to Sanford, New York, a pleasant place of 2,800 citizens on the New York-Pennsylvania border. Unfortunately, the pleasantness has been interrupted by a major squabble over whether corporate drillers should be allowed to extract natural gas by fracturing the huge Marcellus shale formation that underlies the region. Hydraulic fracturing is rampant on the Pennsylvania side, but New York imposed a moratorium on the inherently dangerous process in order to assess the health and safety issues involved. However, as On Earth magazine reports, Sanford's town board is eager to allow oil and gas outfits to frack away. The board even leased land to one corporation that wants to drill inside the town. But last fall, Sanford officials went further, imperiously imposing a gag order on their own citizens. It seems that opponents of the profiteering rush were using the board's public comment session to, well, to comment publicly. Irritated, the board decreed that any topic could be discussed at its meetings except fracking. They rationalized this autocratic restriction on people's democratic rights by saying that the ongoing discussion on whether to frack or not got in the way of other board business. But gosh, that's the way it is in a democracy. The people themselves can dare to set the agenda by insisting on discussing the big issues that matter most to their families and communities. This is Jim Hightower saying the gag townspeople have now sued the Sanford board for fracking their free speech rights and making a mockery of democracy. For more information, contact Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy at catskillcitizens.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
I'll be taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime.
Well, you know, that's one thing they have been doing, working overtime and figuring out how it is we're going to screw the working people of this country. And you got to give Terzai credit. You know, they got their castle doctrine done. They're going after women's right to choose, done. Voter suppression, done. Yes. Gonna be able to take rights away from people to vote. Yeah, done. Hey, good stuff. And like I've been saying, you know, he prefaced that speech off by saying, you know, we're focusing on making sure that we meet our obligations, what we've been talking about for years. And as I've been saying, look, they've been whispering this stuff to each other for years in their little back rooms and their little secret clubs and their secret meeting halls. Now they're emboldened. Now they feel, you know, hey, this is an opportunity to push our agenda and push back against, well, the entire 20th century. Go back to the good old days. Back before all of those changes, giving women the right to vote, minorities the right to vote, and any of that stuff. Go back to good old days when white landowners, men, ruled the roost. At least it seems to be the way we're going. Anyway, I've got Joan Fitzgerald, president of America Votes, AmericaVotes.org, on the line. I wanted to get her take on the Terzai thought. Joan, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, thank you very much.
So what do you think House Majority Leader? What do you think of his statement that, you know what, we got voter ID done, gonna give Romney Pennsylvania?
Pretty stunning that he would admit the motivation underneath all of these voter ID, voter suppression laws that passed almost immediately when new majorities took control in so many states across the nation. Just stunning that he would say that out loud. I know he was with a friendly crowd, but it's what we suspected all along.
I mean, it's what they've been whispering to each other all the time. And if you look at the different Republican platforms, and someone just sent me the Texas Republican platform. Did you see this?
No.
For voter registration, they want to repeal, according to the GOP in Texas, repeal all motor voter laws. They want people to have to re-register to vote every 4 years. Of course, they want their photo IDs, and they want proof of residency and citizenship. You got to bring that with you. You got to bring your voter registration application with you. They want all this stuff. They want you to bring a whole filing cabinet with you to go to vote.
You know, you don't really have to win the arguments about what's best for the country if you can selectively choose who's going to be able to vote, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the Republican platform. They want to repeal the Voting Rights Act of 65. Just get rid of it. I don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, much of the dialogue was, well, it's not necessary anymore. These things don't exist. If you look across the nation at the number of states that rolled back what were considered access to the ballot laws, whether they took away days for early voting in the West, there's a lot of early voting that goes on, or made it much more difficult for groups to register as they did in Florida, or their culling of voter registration lists through some means saying we don't think these people are citizens. I mean, this is pretty egregious. And you know, thanks to your majority leader in Pennsylvania, we finally had somebody admit out loud why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, he's not the brightest bulb in the box, but still, I mean, come on, say something honest. You know, look, I mean, they kept telling us, and if you remember November of 2010, every Republican was saying, well, we're going to focus on jobs, 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 laser-like. Maybe you remember it. Laser-like focus. They had this little pledge thing where jobs, 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 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yet all I've seen is this divisiveness. All I've seen is taking my rights away at every turn. If it's not workers' rights, it's women's rights. And if it's not, it's voting rights.
Voting rights, you know, underneath it all, there was a lot of turmoil January after these new majorities took over in places like Wisconsin and Michigan, and Pennsylvania to a lesser extent. But what we really saw them do after they were, you know, finished with their attack on women, or simultaneously with some of the really tough laws that they were enacting that changed really progressive politics that have really evolved over the last 50 years, but underneath it all was this simultaneous just chipping away at who could vote. And they got that done pretty efficiently.
Yep.
They were getting ready for this election year, knowing that it could be a wave election for Congress. They took care of that very neatly with gerrymandering, in places like Pennsylvania, making congressional districts almost impossible for anyone but a rock solid conservative right wing Republican to win. and they're just selectively choosing whom they want to be able to cast ballots.
Yeah, you know, I go back to that Paul Weyrich quote where he said, you know, I don't want everybody to vote. You know, our elections have never been won by the majority of voters, and they never will be. Talking to ministers, saying, you know, if we can hold down the vote, we can win. And here we are.
Yeah,
you know,
says something about what they believe about democracy
and about religion. I mean, you're talking to Baptist ministers saying we want to cheat people out of their right to the ballot box. I mean, it's mind blowing.
It is mind blowing, but you know, it was all across the nation. There were very few states that did not see this rollback of voting rights, and you know, people whose interests would be served by the majority of people being heard. Are going to get hurt in this election if people get turned away or are told that they, for some reason, can't vote. There was a hearing today in the Senate over deceptive practices. A lot of things have occurred with the new media, people being either robocalled or told that, oh, you don't need to vote, the election date's been changed. There's a bill in the Senate right now making it a crime to engage in these deceptive practices that not only discourage people from voting, but out and out lie to them about, you know, when voting's going on or where they're supposed to go to vote.
Well, gee, don't you think that's about time? I mean, it's Senate Bill 1994. Isn't it about time? I mean, I've been screaming about this for years. You know, every time.
Long overdue. Yeah.
But where are the Democrats in this? I mean, even with this voter suppression bill that was passed here, I have yet to find one Democrat who's come out and said, you know what? I want to push legislation to make voting more accessible. We should have same day registration. We should have weekend voting. Where is the push to expand it? Where's the national push for that?
You're exactly right. And that has to happen because voters respond to that. I used to be a county clerk and reporter, back when I first started in politics. And we had our first mail ballot election in 1993. It increased voter turnout in mayoral elections from what was a dismal 15% to 16% to 42%. A school board election went from a 3% turnout to a 42% turnout. People now in my old state of Colorado vote at about 64% by mail ballot. They choose to do that.
I mean, with the technology,
the more you expand it, people will use it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm in favor of, hey, we spent a couple of $1 trillion over in the sandbox in the Middle East so that people in Iraq can go to the polls and put their finger in an ink pad and walk away with their finger up. But we're denying people the right to vote. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No. You know, for those of us that lived through the late 50s, early 60s, to see what people went through, to assure that they would be able to exercise their right to vote. The 1964 Voting Rights Act, this has been under assault with this Congress, and we have to remember what a price was paid for people to exercise their right to vote.
Do you think that's the problem? Do you think maybe it was long ago and we've forgotten? Maybe most of us didn't, we didn't live through it. We don't, it's always, for me, it's always been, you know, I go to the polls, I vote. You don't know what the battle was. Do you think that's part of the problem?
I think part of the problem is that as an electorate, we always think they're talking about somebody else.
Yeah.
Until we realize that,
hey, it's me.
It's everybody who disagrees with the conservative right wing that they don't want to vote. It's very frightening. And, you know, you just have to study history to see what people went through to get the franchise. And it's not something that we should, you know, let die with a whimper here.
Yeah,
this is very serious stuff.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I've had numerous discussions with people who tell me, you know, over this ID thing. I go, you know, they tell me to rent a car, you need to have, you know, you need to have an ID. To rent a hotel room, you need to have an ID. To get on a plane, you need to have an ID. And I go, yeah, I know, but I don't have a constitutional right to rent a car, or rent a hotel room, or get on a plane. I got a constitutional right to the ballot box.
And let's talk about, you know, a problem in search of a solution. A solution in search of a problem. This is ridiculous. You know, we know that there have been fraud-free elections in states. Minnesota has always been a paragon of, and they've got same-day registration. Well, you've got a voter ID law now in Minnesota. This was a state that had absolutely, talk to the Justice Department, this was a paragon of, you know, how elections could be well run. So we've inserted this issue of fraudulent voting. We've inserted the issue of, you know, people voting who shouldn't. We must protect the ballot box from people who shouldn't be there. Frankly, what we're really doing is saying people who should be there won't be able to exercise their right to vote. And that is just criminal.
Yeah, it's nuts. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Joan Fitzgerald, president of America Votes. AmericaVotes.org is their website. You know, I look at this, and while they're restricting people like me to vote, they're putting up these barriers between me and the ballot box. Our Supreme Court has decided, well, we're gonna continue to allow the wealth class and the money to flow freely with no restrictions and no disclosure and, well, none of that. And I gotta tell you, I've got a real problem with you restricting my right to vote, but the free speech of the millionaires and billionaires, evidently that's better, more than mine.
Well, they just reaffirmed their decision in Citizens United in this case the other day that was announced in Montana. Montana wanted to limit campaign contributions.
No, they were doing it. They were doing it 100 years.
And they said they couldn't, that they didn't have a right to do that.
But they were doing it for 100 years. This was the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912 that they wanted to keep, and Citizens United overturned that 100 years of decided law.
Well, these are the justices that were supposed to not, you know, not do legislation like they claimed liberal justices do.
Yeah, they weren't activists.
They are absolutely activist judges with an agenda. And the agenda comes out of the Federalist Society.
So,
and that's what the majority of what we have on our Supreme Court. So we, you know, we've got to really pay attention to this election because there's a Senate at risk that gets to confirm judges, and there's a president at risk that gets to appoint judges.
Yeah.
And it seems that, you know, everything that we hold dear, including our voting rights, are in their hands.
So let me ask you, you know, I saw the big headline in my local newspaper saying, with a question mark, Supreme Court presidential issue? So I ask you, you know, my newspaper seems to think it's an issue. Is the Supreme Court an issue here in this presidential election?
I think it's definitely an issue for anyone who's got a Senate race this year, which you do in Pennsylvania, about the kinds of judges that are going to be appointed by the next president and who is going to be able to confirm those judges. People say, you know, it's never a winning issue for a president to run against the Supreme Court, but I think Citizens United was such an unpopular decision across the country that people have to speak out against the activist judges on the right that are changing the face of American democracy and making it a farce.
I mean, overturning 100 years of decided law. I mean, I don't know how much more activist you can get. I mean, this was, you want to talk about a real problem? Exactly what we're fighting against, they fought against in 1912. The exact scenario, corporate money controlling the system. And I guess this is history repeating itself.
And all of these judges were asked the question about whether or not they believed in stare decisis. Did they believe in, you know, overturning past decisions, and supposedly they answered those questions to the satisfaction of those conservative senators that were so worried about a Supreme Court that would basically write its own legislation. So we certainly have something in the Supreme Court that we at least didn't count on. With the kind of appointees that were made through the Bush years, and before that, Reagan's appointees as well. Yeah. I mean, it's frightening.
It is frightening, but for me, this is the issue. Because I do believe there may be a justice that will be appointed, possibly two in the next cycle. That scares me. To bring it home here in Pennsylvania, what are the issues that America Votes is working on here in Pennsylvania? I know this budget thing. You look at the number of teacher layoffs. You look at the, you know, just all of the attacks that are coming, the attacks on public pensions. What are you guys working on?
Well, certainly all of that. You know that the Partners of America Votes are, we have union partners, we have Planned Parenthood partners, we have environmentalist partners like League of Conservation Voters and Sierra Club. And you in Pennsylvania are in the thick of a lot of that. You've got, you know, the shale issues. So they're working on all of those things. They worked through the legislative session to try and make progressive voices heard in Harrisburg. And now that we're into election season, we're going to be, you know, looking at the people who serve in Harrisburg as well as the people that go to Congress to make sure that the past 60 years of progressive legislation have a chance of surviving the next 2 to 4 year terms of whomever gets elected.
Yeah. You know, I look at this legislative session and there's the Supreme Court gave the Democrats a slight chance, not that they're the great savior, but at least it may add some balance in the House. And I'm hoping that we can see at least the Democrats take back at least the House. I know the Senate's foregone conclusion. That's never
right.
going to happen. But at least the House to add some balance, because you look at this whole budget thing. They keep talking about, oh, there are compromises and they're wheeling and dealing. No, they're not. It's one-party rule. The Republicans have
exactly.
steamroller power in this state.
Exactly. Somewhere in there we need a bully to stop things that are really detrimental to working people.
Yeah.
And that's what our partners will be focused on in Pennsylvania. And we want to make sure that people who are eligible to vote in Pennsylvania are able to register, able to get the proper ID to be able to register. And then let's make sure we educate and turn out our voters so that we have a representative group of people casting ballots so that Pennsylvania can be a decent place for people to raise their families, send their kids to school, and retire.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question I've got for you. You talked about the getting people to be able to vote. What if you don't have the necessary ID? What if you don't have the ability to get the ID? Is there any help, any advice on how to weave through the system?
We're working with certain groups that are concentrating on how do we get the proper amount of documentation for people who have a very hard time, people whose records have been lost. And we're going to be working on that over the summer to make sure that by the time the deadline hits, that people who, you know, have previously voted without a problem but now need some sort of government-sanctioned pieces of paper to be able to register and to vote have that information. So there are groups like the Brennan Center in New York that do fine work on this, and we're going to be finding ways to assist people.
Well, I look forward to that. And when it comes up, please let us know. It's always great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And good luck. Pennsylvania's certainly been in the news lately.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's been a tough season.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why now is the time to dig in and fight back. And I love the work you guys do over there at America Votes, AmericaVotes.org, the website, Joan Fitzgerald. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick.
Let's take a quick break back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is why we fight, why we
for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Trying to form a plutocracy, but if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
Oh, yes, yes, wonderful, wonderful, especially if we could just make sure no one that we don't want to vote could vote.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Done. It's done. I wonder if Corbett has a list of people he'd like to purge off of the voter rolls, kind of like what Governor Rick Scott down in Florida's got. If you remember, he only wanted to have his ineligible voter list. He claimed it was only about 2,600 names, and then you went through them and you found there was virtually nobody. There was nobody on there that they could prove was not a legal citizen. No one. Now they find out and that evidently the governor has a secret list of 180,000 quote unquote ineligible voters. And again, you know, they haven't shown me with any certainty that there's a problem here. And I think like Joan Fitzgerald said, look, this voter suppression bill that they rammed through here and they've ran through across the country was a solution to a problem that did not exist. And they throw out diversions. Oh, what about Joe Cheeseborough? And I got a couple of emails from people who said, well, you know, I heard maybe. No, Joe didn't vote. No fraud there. Not there. No there. But Senate Bill 1994, it's about time that someone said, you know what, whenever a group puts out, oh, we've moved voting day to Wednesday this year, somebody should go to jail. That is deliberate fraud. Whenever they put out a robocall saying, hey, we've moved your voting poll somewhere, or hey, voting day's next week, or hey, oh, by the way, if you sign the petition to recall Scott Walker, you don't have to vote because your vote's already been cast. That is fraud. What they've done here, what the suppression bill that the Republicans rammed through here in Pennsylvania, what it didn't do was solve that. Didn't solve the real problems. They did the politically expedient thing, which was, hey, we got a talking point. We need to stick with our talking points. But it didn't do anything to solve the problem. Also got an email during the break. Ron pointed out that he said, how much do you want to bet the nurse in the story about the guy who died doesn't get charged with negligent homicide? Being a medical professional, she should be held to a higher standard. Agree to a point, agree. You're going to have to prove that, you know, she absolutely made the call, and I don't know all the details going off of the story from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, but if it came down that she made that call, as the Star Tribune said, that it was all a cost-cutting thing, jail time for her. She should be locked up right where she was at. But the story that I went back and looked at, she's still employed there, and I guess the story was 2010. It's just now come out. She's still working there, making $80,000 a year. Quick break, back after this.
is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
Earth, sky.
In late 2012, researchers at the National Marine Mammal Foundation published their acoustic analysis of the voice of a whale that apparently can imitate a human voice. Here's what he sounds like from an audio track made by scientist Sam Ridgway and his team, courtesy of the journal Current Biology.
That sound is coming from a beluga, or white whale, named Nock. He lived in an enclosure at the National Marine Mammal Foundation, among dolphins and other white whales. He'd often been in the presence of humans. Researchers working near him sometimes thought they heard another person talking. They were surprised to find the voice was coming from the whale.
That was in 1984. Prior to that time, there had been anecdotal reports of whales sounding like humans, but no real evidence or analysis. Scientists at the National Marine Mammal Foundation recorded the whale's sounds. They found a rhythm similar to human speech and fundamental frequencies several octaves lower than typical whale sounds.
They said the observations suggest it wasn't easy for the whale to make these sounds. And that, they said, suggests motivation for contact on the part of the whale. For more about Nock, the whale with a human voice, come to EarthSky.org. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. There's a $1 million man.
Oh, yes, the $1 million man always gets his way. And look, you know, you look at this, they bought the best Supreme Court they could get. The decisions have gone their way. 68% of the time, the Chamber of Commerce, they get their way. Money wins, man. And until we stop allowing ourselves to be divided, until we stop allowing ourselves to be sliced and diced and pitted against one another, they're going to continue to win. They're going to continue to control this nation. Remember, we the people. Not we the corporations, not we the corporate people, not we the people with a whole bunch of money. We the people. That simple. Looks like our Congress, they're, you got to give them credit. You know, they make an agreement and then they renege on it. You remember the $1.2 trillion in cuts that were supposed to come as a punishment for not reaching an agreement on the debt ceiling? Well, the mandatory triggers? Well, I guess they're trying to figure out how to push that off until at least, you know, March of 2013. You know, after the election and after the new president finds his way to the bathroom or Obama gets to, you know, continue hanging out there, whatever. They're going to, you know, push on the Bush handouts. They're going to push on all of the other expiring tax laws, all of that stuff. Another short-term agreement. And I look at this and I go back to that whole certainty argument. They keep telling me that business doesn't create jobs because, well, they don't have certainty. It's all this regulation. Well, you know, because we got all this regulation stuff there. All these problems. Uncertainty with the tax code, I think, is much bigger than are we going to pass regulation, making sure that we can't pollute. Because I think the Republicans have done a pretty good job of bottlenecking our entire government apparatus. But again, I go back to the Republican Party platform of Texas, who wants protection from extreme environmentalists because they oppose all efforts of the extreme environmentalists that stymie legitimate business interests. I oppose those efforts that attempt to use environmental causes to purposefully disrupt and stop those interests within the oil and gas industry. They also strongly support the immediate repeal of the Endangered Species Act, because, you know, we don't really care about animals, except the livestock, of course, because the livestock, they want to do away with a mandatory identification system, because we don't want to know if they've got mad cow, because we should be able to sell mad cow. It's good for business. So they want to do away with the Endangered Species Act. They strongly, strongly oppose listing the dune sage brush lizard either as threatened or endangered. They actually sat down and thought this up and put this into their platform. And now they want to abolish the Environmental Protection Agency. And for good cause. Because, you know, those people who, you know, want to make sure that the air and water is clean kind of is bad for business. Polluting really is good for business. Not very good for humans. It's really not good for you and me. And I got to remember when I grew up in Cleveland, when the steel mills were the residual effect of them just polluting at will had killed everything in the lake. The lake was dead. And by saying, hey, you know what, you're going to have to clean up what you're spewing into the river, which they did. That's not what killed industry. That's not what killed the steel mills. Even though the righties love to say, oh, well, you know, it's those regulations. We should let the corporation just pollute at will. No, that's not what killed it. Understand, we gave huge tax breaks to corporations to move overseas where they wanted to pollute more. And you had desperate areas who were saying, sure, please come pollute. And huge tax breaks and then trade policies that let them bring it back in. It's really insane. And it was all really about the bottom line, how much money the CEOs could put in their pockets. But that's a whole other argument. The Republicans want to do away in Texas, do away with the job-killing EPA, which today's decision by a federal appeals court, not going to make the right happy, because the U.S. Federal Court of Appeals upheld the right of the EPA to curb harmful carbon emissions. Because if you remember, the Supreme Court gave the EPA the ability to set clean air standards and limit industrial pollution from power plants. Gave them that power. So what did industry do? Well, they set up the Coalition for Responsible Regulation. That sounds wonderful, doesn't it? The Coalition for Responsible Regulation. Because, you know, the righties love to tell us, we're not against regulation, no. We just want responsible regulation. You know, the responsible regulation like in the past, where they could just spew at will, where we could just dump oil in our backyard. Yeah, I got a 55-gallon drum. Just dumped it in my backyard. Yeah, so what if I had the drum? If it gets into the water supply, not my problem. You know, I remember back in the 70s, people used to take the used oil from their car and just dump it down the sewer or down the drain. Antifreeze just down the drain. That's where they want to take us back to. Understand that. Because that's freedom. It's my liberty. I should be able to pollute and do whatever I want. I'm an American. But even their Supreme Court said, you know, I think that we should have clean air. And the EPA is the way we do that. So I can't imagine tomorrow what the right-wingers are going to be whining about, but they will be. You'll remember the 2007 Supreme Court decision gave them the ability to do it. But maybe, who knows? I mean, 100 years of decided law on campaign finances didn't seem to bother our U.S. Supreme Court with regard to Montana's campaign finance laws. So maybe they'll go back on this. Who knows? Maybe the campaign for responsible regulation, maybe they'll spread around enough money to make sure that, well, the palms are greased. Also, in the GOP platform in Texas, they want to preserve national security because they believe terrorism is a major threat to international peace and to our own safety. And they urge the national leaders to protect and defend our constitutional rights and swiftly wage successful war on terrorists. And I'd be going, why? And I read this, and I'm going, wait a second. Have we not been at war for more than a decade now against terrorists? Haven't we been fighting this for... And I guess the key word in that sentence is successful. And I guess you could argue that we haven't been really doing a successful job because there are still terrorists. And the question is, will we ever be able to kill them all? Especially when you're using drones to blow up people, creating new people mad at you. Just a thought. I also love in their piece about the Patriot Act that we need to go back and revisit this, and we need to make sure that we respect the rights and liberties. We need to revise laws or executive orders that erode our essential liberties. And I read that in the Texas Republican platform because they claim there are laws and executive orders that erode our essential liberties. And I agree. Some level of agreement. I seem to remember habeas corpus going away during the Bush years. My right to know why I'm being held. As a U.S. citizen, you have that constitutional right, or at least you did, until they made up this whole thing of enemy combatant, and they locked up Jose Padilla for, well, years, without actually knowing why he was being held, and actually being able to go to court and challenge why he's being held in court. I don't think they meant that one. Yeah, maybe they did. But here again, you know, you go back and you look at all this stuff, and where were you? Where were you when they undid Posse Comitatus? Where were you when habeas corpus died? Where were you? Oh, we were cheering. We're cheering the Bush people on. They go on to say, we need reasonable use of profiling to protect us. Exactly what is reasonable use of profiling? Explain to me what is reasonable. Because, you know, I go back to that Pastor Niemöller quote. You know, first they came for the communists, and I said nothing, wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists. Understand. The trade unionists were second. The communists first, the trade unionists second. Those are the people who would stand up and say no to a fascist regime. Pastor Niemöller said, wasn't one of those, didn't say anything. By the time they got to me, way down the list, there was nobody left to speak for me because, look, we're all in the shark tank. So this idea that there's a reasonable use of profiling, to me, just doesn't hold muster. And what they're really saying, reasonable profiling, you're going after the brown people. And then, oh, by the way, some of the darker brown people, well, there are maybe two. And, oh, well, you know, there's some you know, a certain type of wears clothing. Maybe we go after them, and there's some people that breathe. Now, let's go after them, and eventually you've got a police state. And that scares me. Scares me big time. And this whole idea that we need more war, haven't we learned by now? It's not working. And I encourage the Texas GOP, you know what, you want to fight, go join up and go fight. You know, or just, you know, band together and, you know, sail over yourself. Take up collections. I'm sure there's enough of you that would fund you to go. Just nuts. Just nuts. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. to keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The United Mine Workers of America is fighting hard against an effort by Peabody Coal to destroy pension and health care for retired miners and their families. UMWA says Peabody spun off a company called Patriot Coal and set that up to fail so bankruptcy could be filed, allowing the company to shed $1.6 billion in promised pension and health care benefits for retired miners. The UMWA is planning a protest Monday at Patriot Coal's Charleston, West Virginia offices. UMWA President Cecil Roberts.
This might be legally correct. Is morally corrupt, and we're going to find out if the United States government, state governments, the court systems, I believe it's all right for corporations to be morally corrupt and to do their workers and their retirees and their widows like this.
Taken from a UMWA video, here are union miners, relatives, and UMWA leaders talking about the fight for fairness at Patriot Coal.
These men worked, and my husband worked, so that you could have a company and you can make your millions of dollars. Why just discard them and throw them away? And that's exactly what you're doing. It's like you're opening up a trash can and dumping them in the trash. And I can't see you doing people like that.
And just to take me and put me over here and then put my benefits in jeopardy. It's no good.
How can they sit there with a clear conscience and do this to the people that made them the number one coal producer in the world? It's immoral. It's wrong. And there's going to be a day of reckoning, and it's coming soon.
Until I die, I will fight. I'll do anything this union asks me to do. A state might end up having to pay for my medical coverage if I end up in jail, but that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
We got some fighters in this union, and I think they're going to fight it, and I think we're going
to
win it.
Brazil is the most recent country to expand rights for domestic workers, Jesse Russell reports.
There are an estimated 7 million domestic workers in Brazil, and new legislation about to become law in that country will grant them the same rights as any other worker. The most recent piece of legislation will give household maids and cooks in that country overtime if they work more than 8 hours a day and 44 hours per week. The new law also requires employers to pay into a fund for each domestic worker, equivalent to 8% of their monthly pay. The intention is that this money will be given to the worker if the employer dies or if there are other contingencies leading to abrupt termination of service. The legislation comes on the heels of other laws passed in recent years that include guaranteed maternity leave and paid holidays. It is projected that the cost of hiring a domestic worker could increase by nearly 20% with the expanded rights. There has been a growing movement in the United States to pass similar legislation federally.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Opposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
Right now, all of it. Neat little bag out the window at the drive-thru. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the big program, you can download the podcast at our website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone and take the program on the go. Got an email during the break talking about the whole reasonable profiling thing. He says that would be anyone not white. Simple, period. And the answer is yeah. I mean, that's true from the beginning. Anyone who's not white would be the target. And then once they got all that, then it would be the white people who maybe look a little funny. Maybe look like they haven't showered or look like they might be willing to stand up and say no. People who maybe join unions or demand better wages or demand, to vote. You got to get rid of those folks. Interesting. Chart out today by the good folks at the... Well, it doesn't actually say who it's... Oh, the Atlantic. Chart from the Atlantic that points out that mothers with four or more children far more likely to drop out of the workforce than fathers with the same amount of kids. And look, you know, the reality is it's true. when my wife and I decided that we were going to have children, because we were going to have just one, ended up having three. You figure that one out for yourself, and they were all planned. is what it is. We decided, you know, to have a child. We wanted to make sure that someone was home to raise the child and take care of them and actually, you know, nurture and be there and all of that. I wanted to be the one. I raised my hand first. I said, I'd like to be home. I'd like to stay home and play games and teach and do all that. Problem? I made probably in the neighborhood of three times as much as my wife did, even though she had a really nice title. She was an office manager of a medical billing company. Big title, her own office, you know, little thing on the desk, you know, a lot of responsibility. Not much in the way of paycheck, though. I had a menial, manual, working class laborer's job, union job, working on a shipping dock, you know, working, driving a truck, doing that stuff. Made much more money, though. Which is why, you know, there's so many people who are angry with organized labor. Well, I went to college and I'm making crap for a living. I've got crummy benefits. I got a 401k that is horrible. Thanks to the recession, it's nothing. And that union guy, he collectively bargained with all of his other workers and they said, you know what, we'd like some of the profits that we generate. We'd like to participate. And somehow you're holding that against them, which is just amazing to me. And it's one of those things, again, I go back to, you know, we should be, as a working class, pursuing more collective bargaining, not less. Because there's a lot of profit out there. I mean, you look at Wall Street, never more profitable. Every dollar of revenue, the percentage of that dollar of revenue that goes to profit has never been higher. They're wildly profitable. The CEOs are making huge money. And at every opportunity, they're stealing back. Because we're not organized to fight back. They've got the power. And I look at this Atlantic chart. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't surprise me. It just does not surprise me that, you know, the women are the ones that have to do it. And look, you know, it is the pay gap. That's the reality. You know, some people say, well, you know, mothers are much more nurturing. No, nonsense. I don't buy that. It's the money issue. That's what it was in our situation. My wife wanted me to stay home and be with the kids. She just didn't make enough for us to survive. Which is why, you know, that whole feigned outrage moment where Ann Romney said, well, you shouldn't be going after my right to stay home. No, I'm with you. Nobody was going after you. But don't tell me how tough things were when you had nannies and butlers and house cleaners and you never had to worry about, am I going to be able to put food on the table? And you never had to worry about anything. Are my kids going to go to college? Am we making the right decision sending them to the public school? Or maybe should we sacrifice and try something else? No, you didn't have that problem. Your kids went to the most elite schools in the country. And there was never a moment where he said, you know, I should probably be working so that we can afford maybe to take a day off and have a vacation. Never came across your mind. The average working class person in this country deals with the realities of, you know what, two parents have to work in this economy. Don't have a choice. Why? Because there are very few of those menial manual labor jobs that pay more than the crummy office manager is making. And that's really because we've destroyed collective bargaining. We've destroyed the ability to say, you know what? That wealth that I'm working my butt off 40, 50, 60 hours a week to create for you, I want some of it. We're losing that. And they have done a masterful job of dividing us on that issue. And understand, here in Pennsylvania, they're going to be talking about this pension issue ad nauseum. It's coming. And they're going to frame it as, well, you don't have a pension. Why should you have to pay for theirs? Even though the legislature screwed it up, and even though that they underfunded it, and even though the Great Recession, that's not how they're going to sell it. They're going to say, man, you don't have it. Why should they? Because they're masters at it. They're masters at selling us stuff that suck. They're masters at selling us products that are no good because they're business people. This is what they do. they sell us, well, tort reform. How many times have we heard tort reform? Oh, tort reform is going to save us millions of dollars, and it's going to save doctors, and it's going to save all this stuff, and la, la, la. Not so much. 2003, Texas approved Proposition 12, capped medical malpractice payouts. Capped it. Made it difficult for anyone to sue a hospital. If you were done wrong, it's really in Texas a major uphill climb. Rick Perry, he claimed, well, you know, the doctors were providing less service to patients because, you know, they were feared they'd get sued, so they just didn't take people on. Or they were doing too much. They were, oh, too many tests because, well, we're feared. So they passed Proposition 12. And what have, and understand, this is the model that the Republicans keep throwing us, this is the perfect model. It's fantastic. It's going to save money. Hasn't really done anything. Group of researchers have studied this and have found no decrease in doctor's fees for senior citizens from 2002 to 2009. Nothing. You know who did well? The insurance companies. Because that's what it was all about. Those are the people who run the country. You do get that, right? And you look here in Pennsylvania. You go back and you think about this budget, this crummy budget that's taking away general assistance budget, that's destroying social services, that's going after another $1 billion from education, plus... But huge tax breaks for corporations. And Gene Barr, who's the head guy over at the Chamber of Commerce here in the state of Pennsylvania, had a real interesting statement, a couple interesting statements, but this one just caught my funny bone.
Lawmakers this week are working to finalize the state budget for the 2012-2013 fiscal year. A pivotal piece of the new spending plan is the Corbett administration's manufacturing tax credit. A pivotal piece of the new spending plan is the Corbett administration's manufacturing tax credit.
Spending plan. Tax credit. A pivotal piece
of the new spending plan is the Corbett administration's manufacturing tax credit.
Wait a second. I thought tax breaks were not really spending. I thought tax breaks were free money. I thought that was, well, it's the people's money, and it's not going to cost the taxpayers anything. $275 million we're handing out to corporations. Thank you very much. And they're doing pretty well. That's not including the $1.7 billion embrace of free markets that...
Right now, we are hard at work to bring a major natural gas processing plant to southwestern Pennsylvania.
Gonna bring it.
The best argument we can make to the company behind the project is Pennsylvania's embrace of free markets.
Yeah, and of course, free money. But we're handing out all this money to these corporations? Because even Barr, the Chamber of Commerce guy, saying this is spending. So we have prioritized spending money to give to corporations so that they will invest in new machinery to basically do away with their workforce. Making humans redundant, getting rid of them, cutting their costs, and we're paying for it. And not only are we paying for it through the spending that Gene Barr is so happy that we're doing, but we're also taking educational opportunities away and healthcare opportunities. And isn't that what we should be doing? I mean, really, when you think about it, shouldn't we be serving our corporate masters? Our health can go away. You know, our children's future, never mind. Gene also had an interesting statement on unemployment. And again, you know, you look at this, another suck up to corporations, another, hey, look what we're doing, Mr. Corporation, give us campaign cash.
On another matter, I want to recognize the signing into law of a comprehensive unemployment compensation reform bill that will balance the trust fund, restore the system to solvency, and save employers hundreds of millions of dollars. This issue is one of our members' top priorities.
Save employers hundreds of millions of dollars. We're going to save them money. We're going to save business money by cutting benefits, by saddling the taxpayer with a massive bond issue, $4.5 billion you and I are picking up because they underfunded the unemployment compensation insurance plan. They underpaid the premiums. And we now, the taxpayer, get to bail them out. And on top of it, as a thank you, we get to cut their tax rate. So not only are we giving them huge tax credits because it's part of the spending plan, we've also taken basically the liability of unemployment off of their shoulders. Thank you. And did you get a thank you? I didn't get the thank you card. You know, I'm expecting something. You know, I'm expecting some type of thank you. Do you think it's coming? No. What is probably going to come, more pink slips, more handouts, and less opportunity. But that is the GOP way, is it not? Sad stuff. Quick break, back after this. Stick around.
10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
Right now, we are hard at work to bring a major natural gas processing plant to southwestern Pennsylvania. The best argument we can make to the company behind the project is Pennsylvania's embrace of free markets.
Yeah, wow, you know, free money does helps, doesn't it? All the $1.7 billion, that helps. And, you know, where'd we get it? Well, we stole it from my children, is basically what happened. And now you look at it, and Friday I talked about this and got a couple of emails on it. Now you see the Republicans want to take away prevailing wage from workers because the children, you know, these sick children, we really need to help the children with cancer and the children who are disabled and children who lost parents in war, even though we're cutting the budget that would help them.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, here it is, Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 28th day of March 2013, which at least here in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., up on Capitol Hill, appears to be that March is exiting like a lion, which is kind of weird because it didn't come in like a lamb, and I'm beginning to think that all of that is so much BS. This is the Horn. Head On Radio Network.com. your home for conversation radio. Of course, that's the easiest way to get the stream is by going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking Listen Live. But there are other methods and other means, not the least of which are apps for your smartphone, your iPhone, your Android device. Apps like TuneIn Radio, where we are fairly well received, as well as Stitcher Internet Radio, yes. And then there are the other platforms. TuneIn has a standalone website platform, so does Stitcher. Then there's Dar.fm and there's Streama.com. The horn can be found on Roku devices. My, oh, my, we're just getting all kinds of ubiquitous-ish. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, no, this really is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we've got a couple of good-sized thorns to deal with this evening. We are still live, you know, me and that mouse in my pocket. I'm still live here on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., not going home till Saturday. And Agnes is personing the landline telephones back in the studio in West Virginia. If you want to reach the program later on, 304-658-3333 is the number. We'll open up the lines here in a little bit. There's a little bit of magic that has to take place in order for that to happen. I can take Skype calls directly to me here. The Skype handle, of course, is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And the email address is bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. You can friend up with me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Notice a pattern here, or at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. You can also like and participate in the Horn page that's on Facebook, the Horn, and then at the Horn is also a working Twitter account. Wow, that's a bunch of stuff. The Horn, of course, is listener-supported, and it really doesn't go without you. It's been a tough couple of months. We made February and January's fundraising goals. We find ourselves at this point in time here at the end of March, because March will end on the 31st, which is Easter Sunday and was also my mother's birthday. The 31st is on a Sunday, so we're running fresh out of shows for March and as far as meeting fundraising goals is concerned. And I tallied things up this evening, and we're about $500 behind. That's not terrible, but it's significant. About $500 behind in fundraising. And there was also a Beat the Swede challenge on the table, which if we don't reach that $500 mark, no Swede beating will take place. And that's kind of a pity. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional carbon-intensive postal delivery address, which is the Horn, Head On Communications, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, that stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Gentle reminder, don't make any checks payable to Bob Kincaid or money orders or that like. They need to be made Head On Communications because, well, I don't see them and I don't endorse them. They just go to our Horn bill paying account. So, yeah, $500 gets us even with the month of March and lets us feel much more comfortable about the likelihood of a complete month of April broadcasting. I have, as noted, been here on Capitol Hill for the last week, heading home, as noted, on Saturday, and broadcasting from the mansion studios in the hills and hollers of Almost Level West by God, Virginia, for the following week, and then back here. And quite frankly, back here for a while. My colleague Bo and I spent the day today lining up meetings for when we get back here, and they are beginning to pile up in a big way. We're working on the AIC Act. You know that, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 526, which just happens to be about the only hope that Appalachia has right now as far as ending the death, the disease, the misery, the environmental injustices, the poisons, the toxins, the cancer, all of that that attends living in the Appalachian sacrifice zone. So that's what we're doing here, and that's what we're going to be doing for the foreseeable future. But as you know, even though I'm here, we try to get a show out, and we have to fool with the technology a little bit, but sometimes it cooperates, and sometimes it bites back, and we really never know when it's going to do one or the other. Now, something very important here at 7 minutes past the hour, a Boss Man Wayne update. Yes.
The force is strong with this one.
No, really. I just got off the phone with Boss Man Wayne a few minutes ago, and as I said earlier, tough does not begin to describe what Boss Man Wayne is. Apparently, when they were trying to get him tranquilized while he was busy having 3 or 4 heart attacks about a week and a half ago, well, they couldn't get him tranquilized. And eventually the physician looked at his son and said, "Is your father a user of illegal drugs?" And, of course, the response was, "Well, no. Why?" "Because we are having a very hard time getting him sedated. I am certainly glad he is not a horse." It's hard to knock Boss Man Wayne down. Even a heart attack had a hard time of it. That's how tough that man is. That's how much determination for his part has gone into keeping all of this going. But he's in very good spirits and doing a little bit of rehab here and there and some recovery work, and expects to be up and about, he's looking forward to being out of the hospital and starting some cardiac rehab. He'll follow up with a heart doctor and all of that stuff. But to talk to him on the phone, you would never have known he'd even been down. What a force of nature. So he did tell me to tell you, thanks for all the well wishes and the kind thoughts. It means and meant a lot to him. So that's our Boss Man Wayne update. I'm still just stunned. Thrilled and stunned. There aren't many who could take a lick like that and get back up the way he has. So it is, though. It really is. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and like I said, we've got a couple of dandies. Well, not dandies. They're thorns in the side. What are we talking about? We've got a couple of, shall we say, prime examples. For instance, I suppose you saw, and you know, it's not a good sign to begin a story on a radio program with "I suppose you saw," but it's kind of hard to miss, although I suppose possible. I suppose you saw the story coming out about the Newtown police releasing some information regarding stuff that they had seized from the home of Adam and Mother Lanza. What a good mom. "Here, son, you want to go shoot the gun?" It turns out that doomsday prepper Mother Lanza, she had a lot of guns at home, including oodles of 30-round magazines. You'll recall that Adam Lanza fired some 155 shots at Sandy Hook Elementary School. But in the things that were seized by the police, Sega 12 shotgun, and then that was in the car outside the school. And then there was an Enfield Albion bolt-action rifle, a Savage Mark II 22 caliber rifle. The Savage was loaded with live ammo, by the way. There were four high-capacity magazines. He brought two of them fully loaded to the crime scene, the massacre scene. And there were two high-capacity shotgun shell magazines, and those are something to behold. They were carrying an extra 70 rounds of shotgun shells for the shotgun that young Adam didn't get around to using. And there were a couple more 20-round magazines back at Mother Lanza's home. There were 1,700 rounds of ammunition. Zombies! Yeah, see, it turns out these weren't just doomsday preppers. They weren't just shooters. They were cutters. There were 13 different types of bladed weapons. Knives, samurai swords, and what the police documentation describes as a 6-foot-10-inch wood-handled two-sided pole with a blade on one side and a spear on the other. Halberd? Pike? Pike. Probably a pike, wouldn't it be? Well, that was just for medieval reenactments, right? Live action. It's just a flesh wound. But out of all the things that the law enforcement authorities found on and about the premises of Mother Lanza's home, there was this. A National Rifle Association certificate, presumably suitable for framing, in the name of young Adam Lanza. There was also an NRA training book. Now, here's how it works. When you take an NRA-approved gun handling, gun shooting class, well, you get an NRA certificate suitable for framing for a graduating your shooting gun class. And in order to graduate from your NRA shooting gun class, you have to read the NRA shooting gun manual, which tells you how to be very, very effective when it comes time to protect freedom by mowing down 6-year-olds. It's not surprising he had that. The NRA encourages people to A, buy guns, and then take their little class. I'm not going to sit here and go through the entire inventory list because it's just a little too grim. What is fascinating out of this story is the fact that how the NRA responded to the release of information that young Adam Lanza was an NRA-trained killer. Because, remember, he had his certificate suitable for framing. I guess the cops didn't find the secret NRA Charlton Heston cold dead hand decoder ring. And he had his little how to be a more effective killer handbook, because it was a pistol shooting handbook. And as those sage philosophers of the Deep South Lynyrd Skynyrd once remarked, "Handguns are made for killing. They ain't no good for nothing else." Later on, they argued, "Why don't we throw them all, people, to the bottom of the sea before some fool starts shooting and kills either you or me?" Saturday Night Special, the name of that philosophical tome. No, maybe there are, but I am not aware of any pistol-involved skeet classes. Pull! No, only in Western movies where, Yosemite Sam throws the silver dollar in the air and Bugs Bunny shoots it and it rains down dimes. So, there you go. NRA certificate suitable for framing. NRA pistol shooting handbook. And how did the NRA respond? Well, the NRA issued a statement. To say it is terse is to probably hyper-define that term. "There is no record of a member relationship between Newtown killer Adam Lanza nor between Nancy Lanza, A. Lanza, or N. Lanza with the National Rifle Association. Reporting to the contrary is reckless, false, and defamatory." That is what was once upon a time during the era of Watergate. That is what is defined as a non-denial denial. Because from the news story I've got in front of me, I don't see anybody asserting that Mother Lanza or Adam were members of the National Rifle Association. You'll also note that this terse little press statement does not deny that Adam Lanza had learned to shoot in an NRA-approved training course. You'll also note that it is not denied that the NRA produces a booklet for people looking to shoot their handguns and to learn how to do it most effectively, learn how to most effectively discharge a handgun so as to be most likely able to end another human life. That's not in there. Of course, for the National Rifle Association to have claimed they don't produce such a book, or for the National Rifle Association to claim that there are no National Rifle Association pistol shooting graduating certificates suitable for framing would be reckless, false, and defamatory. Got me to thinking. We have here one NRA certificate suitable for framing. One NRA pistol handling manual.
One blue crushed velvet suit.
Hey, all right.
One frilly lace cravat.
There it is.
One silver medallion with male symbol. One pair of Italian boots.
Buongiorno, boys.
One vinyl record album, Burt Bacharach Plays His Hits.
Hey, boy. Yeah.
One Swedish-made penis enlarger pump.
That's not mine.
One credit card receipt for Swedish-made penis enlarger, signed by Austin Powers.
I'm telling you, baby, that's not mine.
One warranty card for Swedish-made penis enlarger pump, filled out by Austin Powell.
I don't even know what this is. This sort of thing ain't my bag, baby.
One book, Swedish made penis and larger pumps and me. This sort of thing is my bag, baby. By Austin Powell.
Yeah, like that. Pistol handling guide by the NRA? Well, that's not our bag, baby. It's charming when they lie in the middle of the day. Isn't it? Yeah. So the NRA no longer apparently gives out, well, I imagine there was probably a high-level executive committee meeting about whether or not they're going to be giving out any more of them certificates suitable for framing. Right? So, you know, while there weren't any Swedish penis and larger pumps involved, can we understand that that shotgun and that 20 shotgun shell extra magazine, in their own sort of esoteric way, they're penis enlargers of a sort? Right? Thank you very kindly to Texas Betsy. She has gotten us started toward this evening's fundraising goal. We are now $460 away from getting finished with the month of March. Thank you very kindly, Betsy. Thank you indeed. A note coming in from our buddy Corey in the Free State of Louisville, who is, I presume, completely invested in the outcome of the March Madness tournament. But beside that, Corey is a bit upset, and I had seen this story, but we'll let Corey tell it. I've been registered to vote since I was a senior, and actually, this is the subject line. Got to get this off my chest. I cannot stand Kentucky Democrats. Which I imagine by the time I get to the end of it will be somewhat reminiscent of why I cannot stand West Virginia Democrats. Or at least a vast majority of them. Corey writes, I've been registered to vote since I was a senior in high school. On our registration forms, there was a choice of whether the new registrant wanted to join the state Democratic or Republican parties or register as a third-party nonpartisan voter. In high school, although I did not follow politics as closely as I do now, my political stances were pretty well known. People were shocked to find out that I did not register as a Democrat. To me, this was not a hard decision to make. There was no way that I could ever be associated with the Kentucky Democratic Party or the National Democratic Party. The Jefferson County Democrats are a group anyone could be proud to be a member of, but unfortunately for me, the entire state hates everything that comes out of Jefferson County except our tax dollars, including any suggestion that comes out of our local Democratic leadership. Jefferson County Democrats, and I trust we're talking about Jefferson County as in where Louisville is, Jefferson County Democrats are more concerned about the environmental impacts the coal industry has on the residents in Appalachia, see our own congressman, awesome John Yarmuth, on the federal level. Yay, John Yarmuth, who is, of course, the originating sponsor of H.R. 526, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. We have John Yarmuth to thank for that. State-level Jefferson County Democrats are all for cleaning up the coal industry, especially with the coal plant we have inside our county borders. But out in the state, wouldn't that be Commonwealth, Corey? King Coal rules both the red and the blue. Well, that's what I say about West Virginia. We don't have two political parties. We have Colocrats and Colicans in West Virginia. Sounds like it's a little bit like that down Kentucky Stand way. Out in the state, King Coal rules both the red and the blue. We have to pass legislation in a special session that gives a huge tax break for the coal industry to build a non-existent coal gasification plant because, you know, investing in renewable energies is such an unproven boondoggle that will never pay off, unlike turning coal into internal combustion engine fuel. This week, Corey continues, Kentucky Democrats once more ensured that while they may be the party I most agree with, it is one I will never join. I realize this is coming a day late, but with the help of a majority of Democrats in the democratically held state house, the Kentucky General Assembly overrode the governor's veto of an alleged religious discrimination bill. Oh, these things are always a real Lulu. A bill that essentially ensures that all laws passed by local municipalities, cities, and blink and you'll miss it, hole-in-the-wall towns in Kentucky like VICO, population 334, making it illegal to, farmers, there we go, Sharkey, Kentucky? Yeah. Right, making it illegal to discriminate against anyone on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity are now null and void if the person whose delicate sensibilities has been harmed is discriminating based on religious views. I know. Right? Believe that women should be kept in the home place, caring for the children, subservient to all the men in their lives, including the sons. If you're an employer, congratulations. The state has now given you a reason to fire every female in your place of employment. Think it's your duty to spread the good news about Jesus Christ to the entire world? Your billboard, located very close to the right-of-way of a federal interstate highway that is a visibility hazard and is in violation of the state's own laws regarding highway billboards, is now allowed to have a judge wear, as part of their robes and in their courtroom, a copy of the Ten Commandments prominently displayed. No longer illegal to do so in Kentucky, Stan, and not just tied to denying homosexual people their federally protected equal rights. Deeply religious pharmacists don't have to give out Plan B.
Silent abortions. Silent screams.
Private drugstores don't have to stock condoms. Shopkeepers may not have to provide services for single women or single mothers. And on and on and on, one more step closer to a full-on theocratic government. And a lot of Democrats helped in that effort, you see. Corey says, I've taken a step back from politics for a while this month, part of it due to work schedule, part of it due to being the most wonderful time of the year in this state, at least with March Madness. But I'm sorry. When a so-called major political party that supposedly is more in tune with the people than the one of the plutocrats, uber-rich and religiously evangelical, passes laws designated essentially to feebly use as a bloody rag in their next elective races that they're tough on morality and Christian values by denying human beings the same rights just because they love people they disapprove of is disgusting, disturbing, disgraceful, and plenty of other diswords in that list. Want to know why I'm not a Kentucky Democrat? Corey concludes. I don't have to answer for the members of the state legislature who passed a completely unnecessary and highly unconstitutional law such as this, which will now cost Kentucky a small fortune defending. See how that works? Yeah. But then again, this is Kentucky, Stan, where aren't they building a whole great big literal interpretation of the Bible theme park with public taxpayer dollars? Yeah, I thought so. Oh, and a little follow-up from last night, a little follow-up to the story we talked about the biology teacher out in Idaho, Stan. When last we left 10th grade biology teacher Tim McDaniel, he was saying that he would not sign off on a letter of reprimand coming from the County Board of Education because he felt he had done nothing wrong. The situation has changed. You'll recall that some really, really unintelligent fundamentalist followers of Jesus Christ out in Idaho, or maybe followers of Joseph Smith, or aspirants to life on planet Kolob. I'm not sure. I don't know exactly how it all breaks out. But they became highly agitated that Tim McDaniel would have the unmitigated nerve and the filthy, filthy, filthy mind to say the word vagina in class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You said vagina? Mm-hmm. Would have been better off going for some of them French fried potatoes. Mm-hmm.
In 10th grade biology class, Tim McDaniel said vagina. Jesus. I don't want to laugh because they're making this man's life a living hell over this. But 2013, 21st century, scientific method, march of progress.
Not in Idaho.
Vagina. Well, it turns out that the Idaho State Department of Education has now issued a disciplinary letter to Tim McDaniel for saying vagina.
Ooh, he said it again! Said it again!
Oh, he said it again! He said it again!
Well, it's just kind of a Monty Python night, isn't it? You're only making it worse for yourself. A disciplinary letter from the Idaho State Department of Education also accuses Tim McDaniel of showing a video clip in the biology class that depicted an infection of genital herpes.
Mm-hmm.
Herpes. Genital herpes. Because, you know, with 10th graders, you just want to tell them, don't get the herpes. You don't want the herpes. Jesus doesn't love the herpes. Well, Jesus loves all living things, but he doesn't love for you to have the herpes. So don't get the herpes. And the best way not to get the herpes is by never kissing or a licking on or a smollicking with any of them filthy people of the opposite sex. And Lord knows if you go a smollicking with somebody of the same sex, well, Jeebus will just send a lightning bolt down and take you on the spot. No, he done showed him a video clip depicting an infection of genital herpes. And he's been a-teaching about different forms of birth control, your condoms and your pills and your abstinence and your day counting. And in other words, you know, those the abstinence and counting days and the rhythm method, those are all fall under the category of how to have a baby. And the Idaho State Department of Education is now charging that Mr. McDaniel told inappropriate jokes in class. Hey, what did one herpes virus say to the other herpes virus? I don't know. Two herpes virus walk into a bar. But it gets worse. It gets worser. Because, as we noted last night, he got in deep trouble because them fine, upstanding future Kolobian parents done found out that he had showed that Kenyan, Muslim, socialist, communist, deep-seated hatred of white people movie by the Al Gore, An Inconvenient Truth. But that's not all. It turns out that showing an inconvenient truth also apparently falls under the heading of politicking in the class. Mm-hmm. because trying to teach students how to think and how to apply the scientific method, that's political. See, anything the right wing doesn't want you to know in this country now is political. Oh, sweet Jesus, I missed that part. Hold on here. What? He's done explained the biology of an orgasm? Well, surely to God it must be only a male orgasm, because I don't think there's been any female orgasms in Idaho for probably since the white folks got there. He told them where orgasms come from. Not just where the babies come from, where the orgasms come from. Texas Betsy, noting, these people in Idaho are on a witch hunt. This isn't my nose, it's a false one. They dressed me up like this. She says, every teacher in my school, myself included, says far more offensive things on a weekly basis. Liberal Texas. No, the Idaho accent. I think just generic knuckle-walking redneck will do for this, Betsy. Irish Dave pointing out, come on, Bob. Idaho is the home of Idaho state legislators, the birthplace of the half-baked Alaskan, and the producer of famous potatoes. It's overflowing with gems, too, also. Gems? Where's Scout? Yeah, famous potatoes. That's enough to keep me out of... Maybe it's time to write a letter. See, this is how you do this kind of stuff. Not that I'm telling anybody to do anything. But this is how you do this stuff. Complaining to the school board. Complaining to the government in Idaho. No. Here's what we do. We start writing letters. In fact, I did this earlier today. You write a letter to the folks at Five Guys Hamburgers. Because anywhere you are across the Fruited Plain, if you walk into a Five Guys Hamburgers, they will tell you where in Idaho your potatoes came from that day. So I dropped them a little note telling them that in light of the fact that Idaho is a bigoted, benighted place that hates science, I felt like I would no longer be possible for me to do business with Five Guys Burgers, because they sell, and not only sell, they actively market Idaho's status as a potato-growing state. Hell, Maine grows potatoes. Michigan grows potatoes. But until this is over with, I will make a concerted effort to make sure that no Idaho potato passes my lips. And, you know, you've got a choice. You're at the grocery store. You can see, where did my potato come from? You morons want to insist that children, that the 10th graders can't learn the word vagina? Well, you morons can let your godforsaken potatoes rot in the cold kolob ground.